and it can only be blocked and prevented to a certain degree. Now, I don't think anybody wants to give up the pristine characteristics of Santa Cruz across the board, but I think that one has to be conscious of the times that we live in. Also, airports, just to come back to airports, airports also serve the manufacturing interests, right? Shipping interests, business person travel interests. So I think that there's a rational place where these issues can be discussed, other than we don't want any of it, and what we have is already good.
Is that what you're hearing, that we don't want any of it?
Huh?
Is that what you're hearing, that we don't want any of it?
In a sense, yes.
Because I hope that you will understand that I don't want all of it in my neighborhood, that there's no room for it. There's no room for us to accommodate the commerce that will bring in and the traffic. But we're not saying the ideas themselves couldn't be implemented in a more sensible way. We just are a wee bit against all the dollars staying right next to the boardwalk, where they'll be extremely convenient for the proprietors of the boardwalk. But I hope that you understand that we're not against all of it. It's just that it's all being crammed into a five or 10 block area.
It seems to me the Beach Flats is a normal choice to propose development in 1998.
Is that because you don't live there?
It would be naturally reacted by not in my backyardism. That seems to me to be very conscious. But in some sense, there are trade-offs that are made.
Mine.
If we're going to continue to become a vital community into the next century, then there are going to have to be some trade-offs made, compromises. I would hope that it would cut both ways, right? That there would also be a community that's conscious of those that do not have the economic resources to plop down $250,000 for a house. Okay, so to me, if there can be a compromise political consciousness that comes out of dialogue like this, then I think a lot has been accomplished.
Well, anything you want to add to that, Roxanne? Or?
Well, it just seems to me the caller's saying that I should really be a big girl and, cooperate and compromise for the greater good. And unfortunately, what I see is going to happen, and you really can't ignore it, is that I believe that there will be a lot of families that will end up homeless out of this. And I don't think that's something that our city needs. It's being denied constantly, but you cannot say for the greater good that we need to break up families, make families homeless. Families live intergenerationally in the beach area. They are strong family units, and what you want to do is put them all in little boxes somewhere else where they can't live together and separate. I just think that what you're proposing is really selfish.
Well, thank you for letting me get back on the air.
And thank you, caller.
All right, you bet.
So, is the caller selfish? Are Scott Kennedy and the Seaside Company and the City Council majority pushing this, ramming something down the city's throat that would have a significantly bad impact on not just a few families, but perhaps on the entire community? Let's have your view. 423-5361. And Roxanne, what's your view, as if I didn't know?
Well, no, you don't know, because to say that south of Laurel is the opportune place to have a conference center, I don't even understand that thinking. If this caller is proposing an airport in Watsonville, then why would that area be the logical place for the conference center? It makes no sense whatsoever. It's just that area is something that everybody wants. And guess what? The poor people own it. So sorry. So sorry you're not putting $250,000 homes on it. And we're not letting you. Too bad for you. It's ours.
Blue Radio Santa Cruz, I hope this is a poor person calling in.
Well, extremely. So I was thinking, south of Laurel, how about West Cliff Drive? Could we make those people homeless and put it in there?
Or how about King Street, where Mr. Kennedy lives? I think that'd be the perfect place, don't you?
Exactly. It's easy for these people to debate it and bat it back and forth and have their little political discussion, but frankly, they don't live in the neighborhood. You know, they don't have, the Kennedy's got nothing to lose and everything to gain. It's not going to matter to him if somebody becomes homeless. It hasn't mattered thus far, in the redevelopment of the beach flats, and it's not going to matter until somebody that lives there does something about it. Who's the council representative that's supposed to live in that neighborhood? Aren't councils supposed to be from districts?
Well, actually, there isn't a district system here in Santa Cruz, but Michael Hernandez has always represented himself as Mr. East Side, although he's not too much on the East Side, actually. In fact, that's what I was about to actually ask our guest, was to comment, kind of give us a thumbnail sketch or of your reactions to each council member, not just in terms of their response to this particular issue, but the broader issues that you've seen them responding to that kind of relate to this issue. I'm sorry, I don't mean to cut you off, caller. Do you have more you want to say?
Oh, that was pretty much it.
Okay, thank you.
Well, one thing I'd like to say is we're hitting Scott Kennedy pretty hard today, but as as someone said the other day, and please, the rest of the city council members don't get too upset, is he's only one of five jerks. And I don't really think they are all jerks. I think they're in a fix, I honestly do, to try and bring money into the city. The reason that we pick on Scott and Michael Hernandez and Michael Rotkin, I think, so hard is because they are so belligerent and so cocky. But in terms of describing all of the city council, I mean, I was somewhat touched. I saw Mary Beth Campbell on a night when people were saying, basically, you know, you just want our homes for the rich people. She felt really bad, and she said, you know, to look at us and think that this is a mean-spirited act. You know, what they really want to give us is housing and stuff. But what people don't understand is you cannot do this for your own good thing to people. I really believe that every member of the city council who's really for this plan should have to live in our neighborhood for 6 months and see what they're really doing. I also think the planning, I'd like to see Eileen Fogarty, and I'd like to see Keith Boyle. I'd like to see them living down there before they could even start a project like this. And they would begin to understand that this is a real community and a real neighborhood. It's not fair. It's not fair what you're doing to people there. And you think, I mean, I think all of the city council thinks it's emotional when we come to them. They're just emotional. They just don't want change. We really would like positive change. And, you know, you cannot put people, stack them up in little boxes on top of each other in projects. By the way, you know, it's becoming a national policy with the government to not be building projects anymore. They don't work. They're full of crime. There's high density. The only ones right now that our city council take people to, they don't take them to Via San Carlos. They take them to the new ones, the ones that are, you know, not all that old, to Neary Lagoon, to the new one on Pacific Avenue. They show them how lovely the housing looks. It only looks lovely for so long. I just think that we really need to think about this and not... I'm still calling it a quick fix. I'm calling it a quick fix because, you know what? Our city council wants to ram this thing through before the election year, before there's new people sitting on city council. If they were so sure of themselves, if they really thought this was a good plan and could stand the... could stand criticism, withstand everything, they wouldn't be so worried, but they are ramming it down our throats, and they aren't listening.
You know, we're talking to Roxanne Akistapache here on Free Radio Santa Cruz 96.3 FM. We're discussing the proposed beach flats south of Laurel redevelopment plan. And I guess before Roxanne, in case you want to join us, by the way, call in number is 423-5361, 423-5361. Our lines are open. We're talking about the claim by the supporters of this redevelopment project that there's going to be a partnership between the Seaside Company and Santa Cruz. Tell us something about your thoughts on that.
Well, because many of the citizens that came in front of City Council felt that the city council was very, very biased in favor of the Seaside Company. It was said over and over again by Michael Hernandez that he sees no problem with having a partnership with big business if, in fact, the public benefit in this case, it would be affordable housing. And again, I will tell you that is not low-cost housing. Affordable housing is something different. This affordable housing for the poor, poor people down there. And when we talk about a partnership, I don't feel that we've seen it so far. Those of us that sweep up the boardwalk trash from our streets every weekend, the Pampers that are thrown out of the car, the cigarette butts. One woman talks about someone throwing up on her lawn after being at the Surf Bowl, which again is a seaside holding, and getting drunk. You know, we are the ones that absorb the impact. We are the ones that absorb the crime. And so far, I don't see the Seaside Company as being a partner in this. Their security, you know, on a nice day, every once in a while, we see their security walking around the beach flats. And everybody goes, oh, thank you. You know, that's such a help that we have their presence around from time to time. We cannot count on it. We don't know when it will happen. It's like whenever they feel like taking a walk or there's nothing happening at the boardwalk. They are not an enforcement presence in the neighborhood of the beach flats. So if we're going to talk about a partnership, then this is what I'd like to see. I'd like to see them start doing something about traffic, about garbage, about all of the fallout from the boardwalk, with the boardwalk putting in either money for extra street sweeping or crew. And then we could talk about whether a partnership is really something that can happen, because we haven't seen it so far. So you have to understand that the people of Santa Cruz don't have much faith that it's going to be anything but a lopsided partnership.
Something else?
Well, you know, yesterday, something that I was just thinking of, one of the speakers at our forum was Keith Sugar, who's an environmental attorney. And one of the things that he said that hit me hard, because it was so true, is that the city council is looking at Santa Cruz as a business, the city of Santa Cruz as a business, instead of looking at it like a community, that they are supposed to actually uphold and make the quality of life better for. That they're looking at it like a business, they're bringing in dollars, they're using the carrot of, you know, making life better for a few of the more disadvantaged citizens as the reason for displacing all these people, building these units. But the truth is that's not where their heart is, and it shows over and over. And I think that when election time comes this time, although I don't know what our choices will be, I think that's something that we as voters are really going to have to look to. Who is looking at our community as people that we want the quality of life to continue for? And who is looking at it as a business to make this a better place for all the people that come from somewhere else?
You know, I think, and not just elections, it's actually every day that people make choices that can affect our community. The kind of choice you're making in devoting time to address this issue in public forums and on the radio, compile information to pass on to other people that the city council doesn't seem too interested in disseminating or responding to. That one of the reasons I propose, for example, recalling a city council member, whether it be Hernandez or Rotkin, I don't really care. I think it would send a significant message and provide a real political focus for people to work around prior to having to wait till November. You know, which, I mean, it's always nice to be able to go in November and cast your ballot and hope that somehow people's will triumph over money interests and the massive amounts of money that people can spend to confuse the issue and so forth, and of course the obscure and rather pre-weighted bureaucratic process that most of us face when we try to raise any of these issues before the city council. Let me ask you, did you, so what I'm saying is that we can act now, we can act every day. I mean,
I agree with you.
Yeah, you know,
I was short-sighted. I so apologize.
You should apologize, for heaven's sake.
I'm
all right,
just not rational
down on your
enough.
Knees, down
I
on
know,
your knees, Roxanne.
I know.
All right, then. Yeah, no, I mean, but I think it's also important, you know, to draw people's attention to the ballot box. But I think the only time that makes a real difference is when the issue is raised. And the issue, as I say, that's why I keep saying, come on, all you people who are getting together in endless forums on Pelton Street and gathering thousands of signatures and getting your faces slapped and your noses ground into the ground, do something. Respond by getting out there and recalling at least one of these people, because if you recall one of them, or even start to recall them, that sends a very serious message to everybody else and may actually change the tenor of the debate around issues like the Beach Flats. Because if they know one person is being recalled, they may want to stop and maybe expand the timeline involved so they actually can begin to discuss the issues for fear that they themselves may suffer a similar recall. What's your thought on that?
Well, I'm going to just agree with you. I the thing that is so hard right now for the people that have been working on Pelton and all of the other land use issues, there's one in Watsonville where agricultural land was just basically can never be agricultural land, and again it was turned to industrial use. The problem is that people who have been working so hard and so long, that each time that they lose a battle, I really think their heart goes out of it. And so what you're asking of people who care the most and are probably the most educated and stuff is to not give up. And I know that the people that have come on to our project to help us, they're just one of the days when someone was helping us the most who had been working on Pelton, someone burst into the Environmental Council in tears because two of the trees had been pruned back so severely that were under order to not be pruned anymore, and the land had been bulldozed without the protective fencing put around it. In other words, the developer just went ahead.
You're talking about the developer chosen by the city council in the sellout of the Pelton Street property.
Well,
around the homeless
this
garden
sellout garden. Is big because I want you to know that one of the things promised to developers now that come in by our city council is that should the citizens sue them, that our city will pay their legal fees. So you can understand now how this is carte blanche, really, for doing whatever people want to do and not getting punished for it. So that developer went in, severely pruned back trees, bulldozed an area where there's a natural spring, just did whatever they wanted. They no longer have to worry about us citizens suing them and holding up the timelines on their work or whatever. So your city council, my city council, is willing to do anything to get their way as far as I'm concerned. And unfortunately, the people who maybe feel differently about it on the city council at this time have not been strong enough to stand up to the ones that are aggressive, belligerent, and self-serving.
We've actually invited Mayor Celia Scott to listen to our show and even to call in. Come on, Celia, get on the line and join the chorus here if you have some things to say. Same with Catherine Byers and, of course, with the rest of the council. Scott Kennedy, you, of course, have been invited on the air on Thursday to respond to the concerns that Roxanne and others have raised. And you can respond today if you want. You can give a call to 423-5361. As can anyone else listening, we have open lines now here at Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM, and that's what you're listening to. This is Bathrob Spears Broadsides. We have a show every Sunday from 11 to 1:30, normally focusing rather heavily on homeless rights and civil rights for poor people, police misconduct, things of that sort. Today, we are focusing on it from a more inclusive angle, considering the very significant Beach Flats south of Laurel redevelopment plan that is steamrolling right ahead. And with us in the studio, we have Roxanne Akista-Pache, community activist in the Beach Flats area. How can folks get in touch with you and or others concerned with dealing with this issue? And what kinds of meetings, as far as you know, are coming up around this issue, the city council? I see that you're looking for the appropriate papers. I have the same problem, Roxanne. Don't worry about that. We're going to be, hopefully, before the hour is over, those of you who are interested in this subject, we'll be giving you a list of meetings coming up. I think there's one on Monday at 7 o'clock,
there
isn't there?
There is. There's one on Monday at the Environmental Center, which is right adjacent to India Joe's in the same building, and that's the beach area working group. There, you know, if you're not sure what's really happening, if you think you know by looking at maps, I would invite you to come down to get in contact. There's two numbers for the Beach Flats Neighborhood Association. One is 426-3026. The other one's 423-0170. And you can call and arrange. Either representative from the Beach Flats Neighborhood Organization would be glad to take you on a walk and show you exactly what is proposed. Because until you see how huge these pieces of land are and what is going to be taken away, you really can't honestly know. If you think you know and you have a lot of negative opinions about it, why don't you come down? Why don't you be brave enough to walk through our streets and really see what's going on there? I, to be honest, my daughter's just gone out to the car to get the number that you would call for the beach area working group. Unfortunately, I left it in the car, so we'll give that to you in a little bit. But there's a lot going on. Ross Gibson does historical tours of the beach area, and he has a very interesting perspective. I don't know if you'll ever be able to look at the beach flats again if you do it, though. There's two numbers for the beach area working group, 458-3434 and 458-9042.
And if you know, we're giving a lot of numbers here this show, and as I usually say, all you have to remember is one number, 423-HUFF, H-U-F-F. If you call that number after the show, I'll be happy to repeat any of the numbers that have been given on the show to you. And, of course, I guess I can put you in touch with Roxanne directly at some point.
You can, but one of the Beach Area Neighborhood Association, one of those numbers is mine, and that's 426-3026. And you can... No hate calls, okay? I have children. Okay, so behave yourself. Even if you don't like what I'm saying, there's always an answering machine recording. I'm really thankful to, you know, I've been distributing the Epicenter, which was put out by the Beach Area Working Group, the Epicenter on the Beach, and it's a little newspaper that really explains the problem, I think, very simply. The print is large. Everyone can read it. It's not hard to go through. And I went to Beach Hill with them, and I expected to be stopped at every turn. I don't know why. I just, you know, throwing newspapers on, you know, the front porches of these mansions and stuff. I was so heartened to see members of Beach Hill, occupants and residents, come out to our meeting. They got the newspaper and they paid attention and they came. They just didn't know what they could do. They've been worried. They just had no idea what they can do. So if you're worried and you don't know what you can do, there's so many groups that are working on this right now. That's why I'm giving you all these numbers, because what one group is doing may not be your cup of tea. Maybe your cup of tea isn't answering environmental impact reports. Maybe you don't want to sit at a typewriter. Maybe you don't know enough to say something. But maybe you just love to picket. You know, get your best outfit on and march out there and say something. Or maybe you'd like to distribute literature like my daughter and I have done hour after hour, and take a great walk in the sun and make a difference while you're doing that. Whatever you can do. Maybe you'd like to send money. But, you know, there's so much that you can do. So I can put you in touch with the groups that are working on it. I work with three different groups. They're all working on a little bit different angle. Western Service Workers Association, one of their subcommittees is the Renters and Homeowners Coalition. I hope I'm saying that right. If I'm not, forgive me, Carlotta. But their main interest in change, lasting change in Santa Cruz, is jobs that pay a living wage. And you know, this project is going to leave behind, once all the union people head on out after they've built everything up, is going to leave 700 low-paying jobs, jobs as busboys, waitresses, motel maids. And we're a community that has not been able to stand up against workfare. We don't have a strong enough board of supervisors. And so we're throwing women with children out on the streets now, telling them, you get a job and you support those kids. And in a couple years, there's going to be hundreds and hundreds of people who no longer qualify for any kind of subsidy from our government. And what are they supposed to do? Are they supposed to make it on the kind of crummy jobs our city council is bringing into this community? I don't think so. So if you're worried about, you know, income and helping get the kind of jobs into your community, I'd like you to hook up with Western Service Workers Association. There's all kinds of organizations that I can tell you about. And like I said, I work with all of them because they each have a slant that is very, very important to me. So
we're going to give you a breather here. That's a mouthful.
I can just blah, blah.
You can more, and I like to hear it, and we want to hear more. In fact, you're listening to Roxanne Aquistapache, who will be going on, as well as Alicia, who's been sitting here patiently, restlessly and patiently both, her daughter, who's going to give us a unique perspective on this whole Beach Flats redevelopment situation from her perspective. That's going to happen during Reckless's show, which will be coming down the pike in 45 minutes. I want to remind you that if you want to join any of these groups, or you want to more information about how to get involved with them, you can give a call, no hate calls please, to Roxanne at 426-3026. You can call me for numbers of the Beach Flats neighborhood organizations or working groups at 423-HUFF, H-U-F-F, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom. That's the number I use.
Western Service Workers is 429-6016 if you're interested in the kind of jobs that are being brought into your community and that provide a living wage. And then also if you're interested in the Beach Flats issue, they're also working on that, so in a little bit different way than the other groups.
And I guess downtown tomorrow night at 7 o'clock, the Beach Flats Working Group is
me? No, the Beach Area Working Group.
The Beach Area Working Group.
Sorry
about
that. I just have to correct you on that.
Please do. The Beach Area Working Group will be meeting at 7 o'clock. Do we have the address? If people don't know where Indian Joe's is, it's right across the street from Java House toward the hills. If that tells you anything,
isn't it at the corner of Center and Water? Is that right?
It's a little bit further down than Center and Water. Water is.
Now we're talking to the poor people. You know where Goodwill is up there.
There you go.
It's a block below Goodwill. You know where you buy all your clothes.
So go to India Joe's restaurant and then look for where the environmental.
You go in like you're going into the restaurant. You pass the restaurant, and the next bank of windows and the next door is the Environmental Council.
And that's at 7 o'clock Monday. And again, we're going to have meetings galore. They're on this issue. I guess there's a big benefit at Palookaville, and perhaps somebody has a flyer on that one. I saw it distributed the other night. We'll get some details on that.
Oh boy, thank you for saving me. I would have been stoned by my own neighborhood.
Brimstone and Fire, special guest to be announced. Benefit for the Beach Flats community, May 23rd. What day is that?
That's a Saturday, I believe. Saturday night at 9 p.m.
And for information, donations, or program advertising, it's Get Your Pencils Ready. Una, 426-7315. Lisa, 423-9843. Brimstone and Fire, benefit for the Beach Flats community, May 23rd at Palookaville in Santa Cruz. Show starts at 9 o'clock. We're going to give you guys a breather and kick you out for a while, but don't go away. If you haven't had enough of Roxanne yet, and I haven't, I'll tell you, I'm going to try to get her to come back. We're still waiting for you, Scott Kennedy, to call in. Come on, Scott, let's get with it here. She'll be back in 45 minutes when Reckless begins her show. And she may even be lingering around here, so if you say anything that she wants to comment on, she will interrupt, since she is our star guest here. Anything you want to say before you take a brief sabbatical here?
You know, every time adversity comes up, I try and handle it with humor. And I really find that my sense of humor is deserting me when it comes to this issue. I think it's really, really important. I thank you really for listening to everything I have to say. I will be around, and I just want to reiterate, we're not against it all. We're just against the way it's being done and the way it's all being concentrated in one small area, and that the public benefit is just so low. So thanks so much.
You're not leaving. You're coming back, right, in about 45 minutes.
Well, yeah, I'll be back.
All right.
But I see someone standing sitting behind me who wants to talk.
Oh, he always wants to talk. Thank you. We're going to take a brief breather here with an interview with Richard Edmondson of Free Radio, Liberation Radio San Francisco, about the whole problem with the FCC. That's the fools, clowns, and, I can't think of the proper acronym, and cuties, I don't know. Guys in business suits with clipboards, what can you do? They show up, they want to close down little micro stations, they want to support big commercial stations, but not allow for the kind of community discussion that you heard today here on Free Radio Santa Cruz. Not a good thing, not a good idea. Anyway, as I mentioned before, we had a visit from the FCC yesterday afternoon here at the station, and a 12-year-old girl successfully held off those men in gray suits. Actually, they may have been more casually dressed, who knows, but they certainly look men in clipboards. Thank you. We have a new guest just joined us who I will introduce shortly. Anyway, I'd like to take my hat off to Rachel. In fact, I'll even give her name, Rachel J, for those who know her. She came to the door of a building adjacent to the station and said, "Hey." They said, "We'd like to inspect the station," these two FCC people said, and she said, "Where's your search warrant?" And they said, "We don't need one, we don't have one." And she said, "You need a search warrant. Come back when my parents are home." And that was, we found these two at the door when we arrived. I should say the mother found the FCC agents there, and the FCC agents made the same kinds of essential threats to us. "You got to let us see it because, you know, we can inspect radio stations at any time." My response was, "And go get a search warrant, and, you know, that's our position." And they left, gave us a warning, and who knows, maybe they'll be back with a search warrant. Probably not. That hasn't happened lately. But in order to get some perspective on the situation, I contacted Richard Edmondson, a man of some reputation and experience up in San Francisco, who's been doing work with Free Radio for many years, more than I have anyway. And here's a little bit of that interview. And then we're going to be talking with David Silva, our man about city council.
Oh,
hello there, David Silva. And not to mention the committee to repeal the sleeping ban initiative, which
or
is
else.
Or else. It's just entering its final week, so stay tuned.
Welcome. Yeah. Thank you.
All right. We're speaking to Richard Edmondson of San Francisco Liberation Radio. Hi, Richard.
Hi, Robert.
And you, of course, I called you yesterday to tell you about Free Radio Santa Cruz's experience with two FCC officials, namely William R. Zeers, Jr. and Thomas N. von Staubern, who made a sudden appearance near the Free Radio Santa Cruz facilities yesterday.
Yeah, the name Van Staubern rings a bell. I think he's been working out of the office up here for quite a while.
Well, he gave us a couple of, we got two business cards, both of which had the same phone number in the 510 phone area code.
Yeah, well, that would be the office up here. It's not in San Francisco. It's actually in the city of Hayward.
Mm-hmm. His card does say Hayward, though, strangely enough. His companion's card, who as an electronics engineer, says Livermore, but they both have the same phone, so maybe maybe they float between Livermore and Hayward. But in any case, I just thought to call you because you've been working with one of the country's longest operating free radio stations, and you had one of the earliest experiences of a rather disconcerting interaction with authorities around the radio, right?
Well, I work with San Francisco Liberation Radio, and we've been on the air since 1993. We went on the air in May of that year. Well, in September of that year, I was doing a mobile broadcast from Potrero Hill here in San Francisco, and an FCC agent pulled up in a car behind me. And yeah, this I can just, you know, relate to my own experience with the FCC. It was not, you know, entirely unfriendly, basically cordial. He did come to the back door of my camper. I was in a little camper vehicle that I have with a, you know, kind of a pop-top at the antenna coming out of the roof of the camper. And he came to the back door and asked for permission to, well, he identified himself, he flashed an ID, and he asked for permission to inspect our equipment, and for permission to come inside the camper, and I refused all of this. I refused to allow him in, which I understand is basically the response that you guys gave yesterday when they came to your door.
Yes, that's correct.
And I think that, you know, you probably did the right thing. In my case, however, he said, well, you know, if you're not going to cooperate, I'm going to have to call the police. So I basically said, well, you know, you have your job to do, and I have my job to do, and I basically, we said goodbye to each other at that point. He went back to his car, and I went back to my broadcast. But at that point, though, I didn't figure I was under any obligation to wait around for the police to arrive. So I disconnected the transmitter on the antenna very quickly and drove away. Well, he followed me from sort of a safe distance, and we got on the freeway, and we ended up in Civic Center in downtown San Francisco. There was a huge amount of traffic in Civic Center, and I thought, oh, well, my God, you know, I'm in this huge camper, and he's in a little... Mind me, I'll never lose him, but I did lose him. Must have been like opera night or symphony night or something, Civic Center, because there's a huge amount of traffic, and I sort of cut across a lane and slipped up a side street and got away from him. Well, I didn't get away for long, though. The police surrounded me on Webster Street. It was about 8 police cars, and they ordered me out of my vehicle and put my hands in him. My hands in the air, and they handcuffed me and took my wallet and my ID out of my back pocket, and a few minutes later, I got there, and he took down all the information that was on my ID and everything. And then they let me go, and that was much the end of it, except later I got a notice in the mail saying, you're being fined $10,000. Please send us a check.
Did you send them a check, Richard?
No, of course not. And I don't have $10,000. I enlisted the help of my attorney, Luke Hyken, and it has been... it's been kind of on the back burner for the past few years. They seem to have been focusing all their energy and going after Free Radio Berkeley, or specifically after Stephen Dunifer. My case has been, you know, for whatever reason, decided they put mine on the back burner.
But you are still officially...
I'm still officially under the threat of fine, of a $10,000 fine.
Have you actually been ordered by any court to pay us that fine? Or?
It has not gone that far. It has not gone to court. And in order to get me to pay that fine, they would have to take it to court, and it would have to be so ordered by a judge.
Do you know of any jurisdiction where such a thing has happened yet?
I know of lots of cases where the FCC has visited micro radio stations, but I know of no incident where a judge has actually ordered micro broadcast to pay. Now, there is a case coming up in Florida where broadcaster named Lonnie Cobra is facing possible jail time as well as fine. He has been convicted. As it stands now, he is awaiting sentencing, but he has been convicted of 14 counts of broadcasting without a license.
Wow, and his name again is?
His name is Lonnie, L-O-N-N-I-E, Cobra, K-O-B-R-E-S.
And what is the name of his station, do you know?
Lut Community Radio, Lut is spelled L-U-T-D. I'm not too familiar with Florida, but I understand that the sort of residential suburban community outside the city of Tampa.
Did he actually have a jury trial, do we know?
He had a jury trial, yes he did.
And do you know when this happened?
This was back in February of this year, and his sentencing was scheduled for this past, last Wednesday, May 13th, but it was postponed.
Until?
I don't know. To my knowledge, they have not set a new date.
Now, is his radio station been shut down, or has it been...
Radio station has been shut down not once, but twice. He was raided back in 1996. They came to his station, confiscated all his equipment, and left without filing any charges against him. They just took his equipment.
Now, did they take his equipment pursuant to a search warrant, or did they take his equipment because he let them into the station without a search warrant?
I don't know. I'm not sure of the details on that case. My understanding is they carried out a raid. Now, this is something the FCC in Florida has been particularly rabid, and they have been prone to actually raiding micro radio stations with SWAT. This is what happened to this guy, Mr. Cobra. They raided him in 1996, took his equipment. He got some new equipment, went back on the air, and then last year, on November 19th, they raided him again, but took his new equipment.
Now, is his station off the air at the moment?
It's off the air, yeah. My understanding is that correct.
Wow. Because I had heard there were numerous raids, but that no one had been successfully shut down permanently. I haven't been aware of that anyway, and this is sort of disconcerting to hear.
Well, this was a case last year in the Tampa, Florida area where they raided three radio stations simultaneously in one day, and these were raids carried out with armed agents, basically. And there was this guy, Mr. Cobra, and his station was shut down, as well as two others. There was a station called, I think, 87X, and then another one called the Party Pirate.
Mm-hmm.
And they were all hit by armed SWAT on the same day, and they were all shut down.
But no one else has been prosecuted, as far as you know?
As far as I know, now he, for some reason, I think because he had been raided previously and gone back on the air, I think that's why they chose to prosecute him.
I see.
Now, my understanding is that the Party Pirate has gone back on the air at least for temporary broadcasts of one type. They are also broadcast on the internet.
Mm-hmm.
But Mr. Cobra station, the Lut Community Radio station, my understanding is that station is now dead.
Mm-hmm. What about other stations in the area? Has this kind of action successfully intimidated them, as far as you know?
Well, oddly, I was reading something on the internet the other day talking about new stations that had gone on the air in Florida. This has not been too much of an intimidation to people. I think it's just, you know, people, a case of people refusing to be silent.
Now, San Francisco has about how many micro stations that you know of?
Well, we have three. Two of them are off the air right now. One, Radio Ecce's, was visited by the FCC, and this was, I think, it was either late last year or earlier this year, I'm not sure which. They were visited by the FCC, and after sort of a cordial visit at their office, the FCC then went to their landlord and put pressure on their landlord, and their landlord just basically freaked. He didn't know what to do. He responded to the FCC pressure by taking their antenna down off the roof and making them get out of the building.
And this, again, the name of the station was?
Radio Equis.
Mm-hmm. In San Francisco?
Yeah, they broadcast, or they did broadcast in the Mission District of San Francisco.
And so they were essentially evicted off the air? Or?
Yeah, yeah. Now, the other station is a station in Noe Valley, and I am just, I don't know what's going on with those folks. I don't know them very well, and I haven't been in close contact with them. But there is another station which has been on the air, and maybe to return, I'm not sure, is a station called Noe Valley Free Radio.
And, of course, the old granddaddy of them all, Free Radio Berkeley, how's that coming along?
Well, Free Radio Berkeley is, far as I know, they're doing okay. They're broadcasting 24 hours a day out of their space in Berkeley, and they are organizing a conference coming up here in San Francisco sometime in June. I'm not sure of the exact date.
Hmm. Wow. Well, any words of wisdom, advice, or warning to Free Radio Santa Cruz broadcasters?
Well, the FCC did something new recently when they visited a radio station in Texas, a little town in Texas called San Marcos, I believe, a radio station called KIND, K-I-N-D. The FCC visited them, and instead of issuing them a notice of apparent liability, which is what they did in my case and many, many other micro-broadcasters who have been visited, what they did was they issued some sort of a subpoena for them to appear at a hearing in Washington. So you might be hit with some sort of demand that you guys appear in Washington.